This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. And we have in the studio Rev Joy,
Rachel,
and Sarah.
And it's the girls' night out.
Yes, it is.
Now, we were going to have a guest, but we've lost them. How could you lose them?
Look, it's not even raining tonight, so they've definitely gotten lost.
They wouldn't be the first ones to get lost on the way to the Joy Studios.
Well, that's true. I tell people to look for the big silver toilet.
Yes, that's true. It's a bit of a TARDIS out the front for all the taxi drivers to have there. So it was a bit of a comfort break from time to time. So,
well, yes, and they put it right outside here so we can just direct people to the studios. So we're going to make it up as we go, aren't we?
Yeah, of course. What we do best.
Oh, exactly. We're going to start off, though, with a Melbourne Gospel Choir track. And this is quite appropriate because we're going to talk to you, Rachel, about your visit to the Solomon Islands.
Yes.
And they had a big storm.
Yes, they've recently gone through a rain depression, which ended in floods and landslides. So, big storms.
So our first track is actually called Through the Storm. So here's the Melbourne Gospel Choir. And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. That was a beautiful track. It didn't sound very stormy, did it?
No, it didn't. It was a very calming storm.
Yes, because you're through the storm. Now, if you want to ask a question of us, because we need questions tonight, you can SMS us at 0427-JOY949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au, or you can ring. What's the number?
1-300-JOY949, and you can talk to a real life person because
Brian,
the very lovely Brian, is out there.
He'd love to talk to you.
He's currently chatting it up with Michelle from Stand Up Straight, but I'd love to speak to you.
Oh, everyone talks to that blinking Michelle. We love Michelle though. She had another fabulous program tonight, and they are 1 year and one program old.
They are indeed. I was there for the very first one, so.
And last week there was a big birthday party happening.
There
with
were
lots
balloons,
of food and
cake.
I missed the cake.
You did.
Two types of cake.
Now, if you've got an Joy app, you can press the contact button and ask a question of us. Yes. Anything.
And if you drive an Android phone, update your Joy app because it's all been newified recently and it looks very pretty now.
Oh, does it?
Looks a little less 90s.
I might have to do that. So, Rachel,
yes,
you ran away the night of Radiothon.
I did.
To the Solomon Islands. Why?
Well, why not? No, my parents have been living over there for just over a year now. They lived over there 2 years ago for 2 years also. And so I went to just hang out with my parents for a bit as well as to just, you know, relax and have a bit of a holiday. But it's just an incredible experience being over there and a learning experience, definitely.
Can we go back to the why question? Why do your parents live in the Solomon Islands?
What a wonderful question, Joy. Okay, so my mum works for the Solomon Islands government, so she's a very important person you don't want to mess with my mother. She's the technical audit advisor to the government of the Solomon Islands, with a team of 12 Solomon Islanders underneath her. She's training them to detect fraud and corruption within the Solomon Islands government.
That sounds at once nerdy and terrifying.
Oh, definitely terrifying. There are a lot of people that are scared of my mother over there because she's putting a lot of people in jail, but in a very good way.
Does she wear a uniform?
No, they wear Hawaiian shirts.
Probably just as well, because otherwise Joy might be making a trip to the Solomons.
She's undercover.
No, there's no need to be undercover over there. Everyone wears flip-flops and Hawaiian shirts, so she's fitting in quite well. It's better than her corporate life when she was in Australia wearing black suits and high heels. She much prefers the flip-flops.
Yes, as someone who spent some time in the developing world, breaking from my corporate life, I can say Birkenstocks and wrap skirts had a lot going for them.
Oh, yeah. And it's not like you even need to look good over there, because nobody cares. Everybody is judged on their personality and not what they look like or what they're wearing, and it's wonderful. And my dad's over there. He is a minister and he's a church consultant, and he does a lot of time hanging out with Solomon Islanders and just being awesome. And he plays a lot of golf, which he really loves as well.
Shouldn't he be the prison chaplain so when your mother puts him in jail, he can visit them? Now, that would be a good thing.
That would be very well coordinated.
I might suggest this to him. Mm. I'm not even sure he's thought of that. That would fill up some of his spare time. No more golf games. You need to go to jail, Dad. Go to jail.
Is he minister at a church over there, or does he help out at a church over there?
He is affiliated with the SSEC Church, so South Seas Evangelical Churches. It's probably one of the biggest church denominations over in the Solomon Islands. It is a very Christian country. Mm. There is a lot of churches in general over there. But my dad was ordained Baptist, and there is a link between the Hunter Baptist Association in New South Wales with the SSEC Churches, which is how my dad started working with them over there.
I wonder, was the Solomon Islands always Christian? It wouldn't have been, would it?
No, but it was the focus of some pretty significant missionary activity quite early on. And so, as I understand it, something like 97% of the population are very deeply religious, church-going, Sunday-type folk. So,
same for a lot of the Pacific Islands, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of that has to just do with the fact that they were the target of a lot of missionary activity. You know, even from early on from Australia, once we were colonised, a lot of Australian churches started sending people out to the Pacific Islands. Unfortunately, in the backdrop of a lot of Pacific Islanders then being returned to Australia to help out involuntarily on sugar plantations in Queensland and whatnot as well. So we shipped religion over there and strong people back, unfortunately. But the end result is a deeply, deeply Christian nation.
So do you know what they would have been before?
I'm not entirely certain. I understand that there are some kind of animist background, though. So whereas, you know, my experience is in West Africa, where animism is very codified and formalized in voodoo, I understand that there's some kind of animist ancestor worship type situation in the background, but I'm not familiar with it because, you know, in many ways it's almost invisible nowadays.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And sure. You're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
We've been doing a little research while that track was on, and we found out that different islands and tribal groups believed in different spirit beings, but often they included a male spirit, a female spirit, a spirit of the forest, spirit of the sea, a shark, a snake. Covered everything, really, didn't it? Yes. Whatever deity they worshipped was believed to have the manner to render protection, strength and guidance to people needed in their daily lives, and in particular in the celebrations of birth, marriage, death, fishing, hunting, gardening and healing. All forms of celebration were communal activities. A particular spirit being was responsible for a particular need. That covers it all, doesn't it, really?
It does. That's a fairly...
If you have lots and lots of gods and or spirits, then it covers everything.
Look, I really love that they included fishing, hunting and gardening in their celebrations. Yes, we celebrate fishing, hunting and gardening, don't mm-hmm. we?
Well, that would provide all their food, wouldn't it?
Of course. Yeah. And it's still very much that way these days. It is definitely not a developed first world country. They're still living very traditionally over there. It's beautiful.
And households maintain gardens to feed themselves.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, they absolutely live in leaf houses and everything still, so it's very traditional and lovely.
So speaking of the lifestyle over there, you arrived, we heard a little bit earlier, during some meteorological ructions, shall we say. Can you tell us a little bit about what you experienced from that point of view?
Yeah, so luckily I missed the turbulent time. That was quite stressful being over here whilst I knew that my mum and dad were going through that, especially because during that time electricity is cut off, water is cut off. They have no connection to the outside world. They pretty much just have the reliance on security guards feeding them information coming from town. It's don't go into town because there might be riots and people are looting stores. So basically what happened was instead of a cyclone, they had a rain depression, which meant they had the annual rainfall of Canberra in a day.
Wow.
So it really bucketed down raining there, and obviously they don't have gutters and places for this water to go. So a lot of the rivers flooded the banks. There was landslides up in the hills. A lot of homes were lost. A lot of lives were lost. And it was just horrifically tragic. And there's video footage of it. And you can see people being swept down the river on the roofs of houses. And Mum just said, we don't know what happened to those people. And it's so sad. There's still people that they've lost family members and their bodies haven't been found. Just horrific things. So Dad and I got to go for a drive up the Manitago River, and that was where one of the guards that works at my parents' place, his family lived, and he lost 13 family members on that day. Oh. It was just one day, and the saddest thing is that there is still tragedy coming out of it, even though it happened at the end of April.
Mm.
And so it has been a couple of months now, but because of water sanitation and things like that, children are dying. The hospitals can't, you know, cope with
giving
vaccinations.
You end
and all
up with concerns
sort of
about cholera and typhoid and the pollution of your water sources, yeah?
Yep, definitely.
What is their healthcare system like?
There's no healthcare system there.
You said there's hospitals.
Well,
though,
there is a hospital in the city of Honiara. It's one of the biggest things my mum's working on in terms of the fraud and corruption. There's been people that have already...
She's not arresting all the doctors. That wouldn't be helpful. Or nurses.
No, they're not the doctors. They're just the people pocketing the money that's supposed to be going to the hospital. And it's sad because a lot of this money comes from donations from places like Australia and New Zealand, as well as private donations as well, and it gets pocketed for things like, oh, it's going to cost $10 million to ship some supplies here. Oh, that shipping company doesn't actually exist. Let's just pocket the $10 million that.
So, is after this disaster, did Red Cross or World Vision or anyone come in to help?
Look, I do believe that there were quite a few organisations that did go and lend a hand. There was quite a bit of upset by the locals from a newspaper article that was written saying that Australia had only donated $10,000 to help the Solomon Islands. But that was just an initial bank account that got withdrawn straight away the day that it happened. But the newspaper got that a bit confused. So some people got a bit upset over that newspaper article. But yeah, there has been support over there. They've been able to rebuild some bridges, which was fundamental in keeping the city running. Chinatown was completely cut off from the rest of Honiara because the bridge had collapsed. And in terms of, like, the water sanitation and stuff, that is something that they're still definitely struggling with, and I'm not entirely sure who's over there.
Yeah, it's all,
possibly
it's,
helping.
Sanitation in general in the Pacific Islands as a whole has been a particularly large focus for AusAid in the area with their WASH projects trying to improve water sanitation, even outside of disasters like this, within the Pacific as a whole. But the Solomons has been a particular focus, I know, for a lot of those projects. So I imagine that they already had some boots on the ground at least.
Yes. And well, Mum's employed through AusAid, so AusAid is always active over there.
Absolutely. And I'm also aware of both Oxfam and World Vision, who already have very significant presences in the Solomons as well, who will have moved people in to do immediate reconstruction stuff as well as their usual ongoing projects as well. So
yeah, and it was great to see that the people that did lose their houses have been given temporary accommodation with the potential of moving into some more permanent accommodation. So that was really lovely to see that the government was able to help in that way as well and not just left them to find some other family members somewhere in the Solomon Islands to go to.
So what sort of temporary accommodation? We're talking about tents or?
That's a good question. It's so they had the Festival of the Pacific Islands when Prince William and Princess Kate.
Oh, yes, I saw the footage
Duchess
of that.
Kate, when they went over to the Solomon Islands, they built this big festival ground. So it's behind really giant walls, and I know that that's where they're currently staying, behind the giant walls of the festival grounds. So possibly staying in structures that were made during the festival. So they had, you know, examples of huts from the different islands, or they may be in tents.
Probably a good old-fashioned combination of all.
You didn't manage to get behind the wall.
No, I would have liked to have seen behind the walls, but I missed out on that.
And we're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
I was reminded that during International Women's Day this year, we had a fantastic broadcast with a lot of little snippets of stories about women's issues and lives from around the world. And I happened to have done an interview for that show with a fantastic lady called Katie from Oxfam in the Solomons. So we're going to take a listen to that just for a moment now, talking a little bit about family violence in the Solomon Islands. So let's give it a listen. I'm Sarah Williams reporting for the Joy 94.9 International Women's Day radio special. When we look at the statistics around the situation of women in the Solomon Islands, there's one number that stands out amongst the rest.
Two out of three women or girls, roughly 64%, have experienced physical violence or sexual violence or both at some stage in their lifetime from an intimate partner.
64%. When you hear it, you know it's a huge number, but do you really understand what that number represents? In Australia, 65% of women participate in the workforce. So picture every woman you know who has work of any kind, and imagine a community in which every one of those women had experienced family violence. That is the reality in the Solomon Islands. Oxfam Australia are partnering with local communities in the Solomons in an effort to see those numbers improve. We have Oxfam team member Katie Greenwood on the line from the Solomon Islands to tell us a little about the work that they do and her experience working against violence against women. Katie, we've heard this frightening statistic, 64%. Living in the Solomon Islands, is family violence a visible problem or a hidden concern?
Look, unfortunately, it is an ever-prevalent issue, and it's very obvious. It is something that you see on a day-to-day basis, I mean, especially working with the partners that we do work with, but also just in our personal relationship that I have with friends and with colleagues. It is something that touches pretty much the life of everybody.
Katie, I'm aware Oxfam are involved in supporting the work of the Family Support Centre in Honiara. Can you tell us a little about their work and about Oxfam's involvement?
Sure. Oxfam has supported the Family Support Centre for more than 10 years, and we think it is really important because they are the only secular provider of counselling for women and families affected by violence. In the last year, they've had close to 400 counselling appointments with women, which in a small town is a pretty large number. So some of the sorts of things that Oxfam does to support that work is obviously it's important to have regular ongoing funding so that you're not constantly scrambling as a small organisation appreciation for where your funding is going to come from and that you can actually concentrate on the quality of the work that you're providing. But we also provide some quality support and advice and technical advice to Family Support Centre as well.
Now, Katie, we know that the work that you do and the work that Oxfam does in the Solomon Islands to combat family violence is much broader than that one program. But since our time is limited today, perhaps you can tell us one story of the work that you've been proudest to be involved in?
Look, I think that it is the work that we have done with our communities in the Elimination of Violence Against Women project. So when we go and we have these conversations with communities about whether they would like for us to come in and do this work, and we worked with one chief of a community who was quite resistant to this, relented in the end and sort of said, okay, come on in, let's had these conversations, but I'm yet to be convinced about the importance of this and whether it's a wise idea to open up this can of worms. And then we had a candlelight vigil event as part of the 16 days of activism against violence against women that this chief came along to and heard the personal stories of women who had been affected by violence. And it's a very moving event that we have, and we light candles to pay respect to the people who have died as a result of violence against women and the survivors of violence. And that chief came along to that and afterwards had been so moved and so touched by the story and had a real change of heart and said, I'm now an advocate for this program to the extent that I will do everything in my power to make sure that this program succeeds and that my community changes so that women no longer have to be affected by violence in this way. That sends tingles down my spine because it really speaks to the effectiveness of some of the things that we're doing when we put all of the conversations and all of the advocacy that we do together and actually let women speak about their personal experiences and their lived realities, how effective that can be to actually make change happen.
That was Katie Greenwood of Oxfam sharing their work harnessing the power of women's stories to stem the tide of family violence and change the lives of women and communities across the Solomon Islands. I'm Sarah Williams reporting for the Joy 94.9 International Women's Day radio special.
And you are on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. The figures that really get me here is that we're saying that 92% of these people are Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 64% of women that experience violence, either physical or
sexual.
Psychological or sexual. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't gel, does it?
No.
So, you know, you've just been there. What is the reason for this?
A thing that's commonly said over there is on Sunday they're Christians and on Monday to Friday they Monday to Saturday they drink and chew betel nut and they're different people, but on Sunday they'll put on their best clothes and they will go to church. There's just definitely a disconnection between who you are on Sunday and who you are every other day of the week, and it is something that is not hidden over there. There is definitely violence.
I was just looking up that they've only ever had two women MPs in Parliament. Isn't that interesting? Ever in their history of independence.
I can probably give you a bit of background as to why that would be. The women, they're not treated less, I wouldn't say, but they are expected to stay at home and cook and clean and grow the vegetables in the garden. They are very much a part of their communities. They just don't get the education usually. So a lot of women over there, particularly older women, so women over the age of 30 probably, aren't educated. They don't know how to read and they don't know how to write. So there's some incredible programs happening at the moment with some Bible translators, and they go around to churches and just teach women how to read and how to write. And it's spreading like crazy because women want to teach other people then. So they go back to their village and they teach their kids and their friends and their family how to read and write. So hopefully those numbers will improve now that women are educated.
Well, I certainly hope so. And they tried to get through where they had 10 seats reserved for women. Of course, the guys all voted it down, didn't they?
Exactly.
I mean, really.
Well, because in reality, when you're dealing with women who are so deeply responsible for the life of their community in terms of feeding their families and just, you know, getting the day-to-day stuff done, the idea for a man that she would do something else is anathematic, because who else is going to grow the vegetables? Who else is going to produce dinner at night? Because as much as a woman doesn't have the skill to be able, you know, isn't educated to be able to fulfill some jobs. Men are never expected to learn the skills to look after themselves as well, because they'll go from the house of their mother to the house of their wife.
Exactly. So we should send them to school so that they can learn to be good housewives. And you're on a Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. I don't know about you, but I've been watching a bit of the football, but I get annoyed because they keep going into overtime. Like this morning, I had to leave. I watched it to the end, and then they go into overtime, and I had to leave and listen on the radio to see who won.
I had been, in fact, not watching it at all, and I got into the lift this morning with six or seven other people, and everyone was like, "Did you see who won? Anyone know?" Suddenly, the phones came out to check Twitter to find out.
But there's a Russian Orthodox priest, Sarah, who says that the footballers are gay. Why?
Well, it turns out that he is not necessarily a very big fan of soccer footwear.
Ah, what's wrong with the boots?
He thinks it might be a bit too colourful and flamboyant.
Did he watch the Netherlands, who wear bright orange uniforms? Maybe that's why they lost.
Maybe. In an article, in fact, that he wrote recently for a Russian Christian website called Russian People's Line, among other things, he slammed the colourful footwear of many of the players, likening it to wearing women's panties or a bra.
Oh, of course.
And suggesting that non-standard colours were an attempt to promote the gay rainbow.
I've got very colourful shoes on, so I guess that says I'm gay.
Yes, I need to replace the grey shoes that I'm wearing with something a little bit more lively so that I can...
Because you're straight otherwise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm the only gay one here.
Well, I think it's quite possible that the pink hair sitting next to you there might make up for the boring shoes.
I'll take it.
Yes. Mr. Chomsky is also just generally dissatisfied with the almost religious fervour with which people follow football in general, and he thinks that, and I'm quoting here, the liberal ideology of globalism clearly wants football to oppose Christianity. I'm sure of it.
But he's very happy that Russia got knocked out of the competition, isn't he?
He is indeed.
Because he doesn't want them tainted with colourful shoes.
Look, maybe if they started making the studs on the boots a little longer and they became like stiletto boots, but I'm not sure about the colours.
I think you might be thinking of drag queens playing soccer
out there.
I don't think that'd get very far.
You can buy runners with heels these days. I've been shopping.
Yeah, my hairdresser was wearing them on Saturday. It was a bit distressing, actually.
Goodness me. Anyway, for those who don't know, the final will be between Germany and Argentina.
Yes, next Monday morning.
Oh, another early start.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh.
I have discovered that the drinking establishments of Melbourne are quite joyous about these early morning games, though, because they get to open themselves up at the crack of dawn and, you know, make money out of people buying coffee and whatnot and watching the soccer instead of waiting until night time when people can buy beer.
I bet the Argentinians weren't drinking coffee this morning.
I think that's quite possible. I did notice, though, that some of them in Argentina, at least, were wearing masks of the Pope, because he is, of course,
yes,
Argentinian and also a massive soccer fan, and he has said that his prayers will be neutral. He won't be praying barracking for Argentina, but apparently that's not stopping any of his followers, because they are all wearing his get-up and praying that Argentina will win.
Does that sort of just cover himself in case they lose?
So if Argentina wins, we can blame the Pope?
Yes. Well, the previous Pope, who was, of course, still with us but no longer Pope, he was German, you see, so there's a bit of a...
I wonder if they'll watch the game together. That could be quite interesting.
I would love that. That would be fantastic.
I think they should televise that. For those those who are not into football,
I'll
they could
tune
just
into
watch
that one.
That would be fantastic. I would definitely watch that.
I'll leave it up to Facebook to tell me how the football goes. I'll watch the Popes.
Now, the Vatican, this Pope is quite doing some quite amazing things, isn't he?
He is in some ways. We were just talking about the position of women in the Solomon Islands, but it turns out there's some news about the position of women in papal academia, shall we say.
Yes. This is a great story, isn't it?
It is. It makes me very happy. So the Vatican have nominated Sister Mary Malone, a Franciscan nun, to serve as rector of the Pontifical University Antonium. She will be the first woman to head a pontifical university.
This is sort of the last thing in a long line of firsts for this nun, isn't it? She's exactly. quite progressive.
Exactly. She was the first woman to get a permanent position at a papal university. She was the first woman to be appointed a dean. And, you know, she's generally blazed quite the trail for the rest of the women of the Catholic Church.
Now, this university is actually the main order of male Franciscans.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's quite a big move for them to actually appoint a female.
Yes, because the group that appointed her of the leaders of this papal university are all blokes, surprise, surprise, and monks, and they have in fact nominated her to be in charge, which I thought was pretty impressive.
I think so too.
Mm. The statement from Great Chancellor Brother Michael Anthony Perry, which is a very grand name for a group that is supposed to be all about humility.
I wonder if he's got a monk's outfit that matches the title.
Perhaps. But he expresses his warmest congratulations to Sister Mary, sharing with conviction the confidence expressed by this choice by the congregation itself in the certainty that the daring novelty of this appointment will open new horizons for the life and academic activities of the Franciscan Institute of Study and Research, which I think is a very laudable statement from pretty much anyone in the Catholic Church, but a senior Franciscan, absolutely.
Yeah, Sister Mary told, when she was interviewed, said that she believes that there is a new space for women in the church. I believe this depends a great deal on us women too. It is us who should get the ball rolling. Well, that's fine if the guys will let you roll the blinking ball.
It turns out that they will in this particular case.
And especially if you try and kick it with colourful boots. I mean, you've got to be a bit careful. Women cannot measure how much space they have in the church in comparison to men. We have a space of our own, which is neither smaller nor greater than the space men occupied. It is our space. Yeah, it's quite an interesting comment. I'm not sure I agree with it in the Catholic Church, but
well, I think also though that it's important to know that it isn't a zero-sum game, that if women are going to take up leadership positions and grow their influence in the community as a whole, but the church in particular, it doesn't by definition mean that the role of men will be reduced. It is about everyone being able to exercise their talents to the best of their ability. So it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. It doesn't have to be a giant threat to the brothers of the Franciscan order that the sisters are taking up some important positions as well.
Well, that's a story of gay football boots. I don't know if the football players are gay, but the football boots are gay. And a very courageous nun.
Yes, you might even describe her as a feminist.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And that's Spirit Lounge for another week. And this is Good Night from Rev Joy.
Good night from Rachel.
And from me, Sarah, on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.